Fox Sports 1340 AM presents to you. WMER, Wrestling Marks of Excellence Radio, starring The Firm, J-Lo, Nephew, Corey, and Dr. D, bringing you the latest up-to-date information on professional wrestling and sports entertainment. Now, live from the Fox Sports 1340 studios in Hopewell, Virginia.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Welcome to another edition of the Wrestling Marks of Excellence here on Fox Sports Radio 1340 and 96.9 FM. As always, I'm your host, Glenn Thomas, with me, the Wizard himself, Nephew Corey. Wizard, what's going on?
What is going on, man?
Nothing much, man. Great week of professional wrestling. We find out that Roman Reigns and Bobby Lashley will face off again to see who will take on Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. We see a return of Randy Orton, who is the I love the heel Orton, who is a viper. Love that. You got a new U.S. champion, which is Shinsuke Nakamura, which is always a great thing there. Carmella is still your champion. It is great to be a wrestling fan. It is great to be a wrestling fan right now. Whether you hate him or love him, the immortal Hulk Hogan is rightfully back in the Hall of Fame with WWE. Regardless of what he did, he still is a Hall of Famer. You gave him my thing on that real quick. You gave him the Hall of Famer. You gave him the Hall of Fame tag before this incident came out. Well, years before the Hall of Fame tag came out, he is a Hall of Famer. You can't always take it away from him. And you can't talk about wrestling without talking about Hulk Hogan. So I'll leave it right there.
Yep. Yeah, you've covered it. I don't even have anything to say about it.
No problem. Yeah, let's get to the show where we do part three of 1997. Thanks for all those who listened to part one and part two who enjoyed it. We want to finish up part three. If you haven't listened to part one and part two, go to iTunes, hit the subscribe button, pull up one part one and part two, or go to YouTube, hit the subscribe button on that, and you can watch and listen to part one and part two of our points, our view of 1997. But right now, we left off at the last show. We left off at SummerSlam going into the Ground Zero pay-per-view. This pay-per-view here for me in 1997 was the weakest pay-per-view out of all the pay-per-views, in my opinion.
They put this
pay-per-view together. I didn't like the people that was on the card. The only match that I actually liked from this pay-per-view was the Brian Pillman and Goldust match, because I'm a big Brian Pillman fan.
What? You didn't like the main event? Really?
Didn't like the main event. The reason I didn't like the main event because we didn't get a winner. And I've never been a big fan of no contest.
Okay, I'll agree with that then, because
in the moment,
who could forecast what was coming? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I agree.
Yeah, we couldn't forecast what was coming. At the moment, I was like, yo, nowhere. This is a build up to this match. And for those who listen who don't know, the main event was Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker. All right? There was a build.
There definitely was a build. Yeah,
it was a big build building up to this match. So it was a big build for months from SummerSlam all the way up to this match. So we get in the build here. And so now, as a young member, I'm in high school here, so I want to see things finished. I'm getting ready to be a senior in high school, so I'm seeing things finished. I wanted to see it finished. So when this match happened, and Shawn Michaels versus Undertaker, I wanted a winner. I'm a Shawn Michaels fan. I really wanted Shawn Michaels to win this, not knowing what's going to happen now, later on, which we find out what happens later on. But I'm like, okay, they should be a winner in this match. Especially after seeing Bret Hart defeat the Patriot, you're like, okay, if Bret Hart defeat the Patriot, we can get Bret Shawn. Maybe we get Bret Taker. But,
Pause right there, G-Lo. Because let's get on that for a quick second of how Bret Hart literally went from being the main event, as in, going for the WWF Championship, to being mid-card for the – he was pretty much mid-card up until he left.
Yeah.
He was mid-card.
He was mid-card.
And I never understood how he took such a back seat to everybody else, and he was the world champion. And
he didn't – what?
No. I was just saying he took such a back seat. Go ahead.
Because he didn't change like everybody else changed. Think about those guys who changed as far as the attitude era or in this part of time. You had Austin coming up who had a little bit more vocal. He was more vocal and more in the mic. Rocky Maivia changed to The Rock, who was more vocal, into the mic. Bret Hart stayed the same, except for putting on a black leather jacket and running around with the Hart Dynasty or the Hart Foundation. He never really adapted to what was called the beginning stages of the Attitude Era.
That's well,
how you
I'm going to slightly disagree. I do think he changed. However, the change made him look like a crybaby, storyline-wise, which is where it made it as though fans were like, okay, we don't see the edginess in Bret Hart, which it was there, but they were pretty much kind of looking like, okay, we don't see the edginess, we just see the crybaby. So it looked like he, that's how I think it looked like he didn't transfer over. But in actuality, I think he was, I think he did change a little bit slightly. But we can agree to disagree. I can see your opinion on that.
We agree. And then, you know, I know 1997, to me, the Patriot wasn't really a real contender, that match. You know, Bret Hart, I thought that they put on a title match just to have a title match. That the Patriot really
was a real contender
to win. Coming off some of the matches that we've talked about.
He had a shot, yeah.
Didn't really have a shot. And the main event was, and we mentioned it, people, like I said in part one, people complain now about the title not being the last match on the card or Brock Lesnar not defending the title. You know, I'd rather Brock Lesnar not defend the title than defend the title in a match that wouldn't give me, give the fans what they wanted.
Yeah, where it was, and, you know, no offense to the Patriot, who was, you know what, honestly, he was actually really good for his run in the 90s, in the, you know, early, mid-90s to,
right.
To yeah, he was a great hand, he had a great gimmick, and it was pretty original. Nobody else was really doing that gimmick of the Patriot, and it worked for him, and just so happens there's a USA versus Canada storyline going on in WWE, and he was a good, reliable hand to bring in. I just honestly, like you were saying, I don't think anybody really thought he was going to beat Bret Hart at any point for the belt.
Nobody really thought that he was going to get that. But you know, we have, you know, and then you had, you know, Brian Christopher, Scott Puskey on the match. I mean, now, don't mind you, the leaders of their respective groups, Farooq being the leader of the Nation of Domination, Crush being the leader of the Disciples of Apocalypse, and Savio Omega, Savio Vegas being of Los Boricas. That match was pretty interesting leading up to it because you see, okay, it's like the whole gang warfare type thing. The leaders of the groups getting ready to settle it, you know, but it was just one of those matches that, to me, the pay-per-view, it was good. It just didn't build up. Coming off of SummerSlam, it just didn't mean, to me, it was a letdown. And like I said, not having a winner really was like the, between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, really was a sour taste in my mouth. So.
Well, then, I thought Shawn and Taker was great. I really thought, because at that time, even then, I really was thinking, who do you let win? Because like I've said before, Shawn was virtually undefeated from Survivor Series of the previous year on. He was pretty much undefeated. Taker was Taker. I mean, you don't, you know, he was Undertaker. So it was kind of like realistic. And it lends more to where I was saying where Bret Hart was, because it was kind of like, whoa, Bret Hart is really, Bret Hart was where Taker was when he was champion. It was, it's weird. It's weird in the sense of, I guess, being WWE champion that year in 1997, not that it didn't mean anything, but it was like being WWE champion in 97, you weren't the main event focus, which really lends to Austin, Taker, Shawn, was that they were the main focus of you know, well, really, not even really Taker, because Taker kind of lacked during that time, even as champion.
He was trying to find who he was.
Yeah, well, then I will include him. So really, Austin, Bret, Taker, Shawn were all big factors when they weren't champion, except Shawn. And I'm not even biasly speaking for that. Shawn's the only one that, as WWE champion, he was still the biggest focus on the show. All the others were Austin and went on the next year. But Taker, while he was champion, he wasn't really the focal point of the show. And then Brett, once he became champion, he took a back seat. So it was just very weird to see those dynamics in 97 to where you had these guys that weren't the champions were the main draws on the show.
Right, definitely. You know, one thing we also got to talk about to the listeners that during this time, you know, we talked about the Intercontinental Championship was going through a little tournament. They was having a tournament for the Intercontinental Championship during this time. So they had to find, because of Austin's injury, so they had to find a worker or a star to combat the world champion, you know what I'm saying, to get to find a balance, because you couldn't go so many weeks without having a champion. And so with Brett facing guys like the Patriot and not putting on, you know, Vader again, I think the next Monday night, end up facing Vader the night afterwards, you know, there was really no main contenders. And the main focus was Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. Yeah. And we had to get a main focus. You know, and that's what they was building up to. Austin was gone at this time. You know, the question was brought up, I think we talked about it in our group, and the question was brought up, if Shawn and Taker had left, would WWE survive? They wouldn't have survived at this time.
Not at all.
If Shawn and Taker would have left, Bret Hart couldn't do it. He couldn't carry it. And Austin was gone. Who was going to carry the mantle? Triple H wasn't ready yet. The Rock wasn't ready yet. Who was going to carry the mantle of WWE?
Mick Foley wasn't ready yet either. So
Mick Foley wasn't ready yet. And you didn't know what Brian Pillman, you know, sadly to say, he wouldn't have been around for the rest of this.
Yeah, and Shamrock wasn't ready either. So
nope. So those two guys were the pillar, Taker and Shawn, even though they wasn't a champion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, exactly. Even though it was a champion. But we'll go on to you know, then we move on. Like I mentioned, the Intercontinental title was being put on in the tournament to crown the new Intercontinental champion. But then we go into the next pay-per-view, which is September pay-per-view, which was one night only. And this was coming from Birmingham, England. This came from England. One of the few pay-per-views that we can go on and count our hand that was actually overseas. WWE did a lot of things overseas at this time. But this one here, he had the main event with Shawn Michaels versus the British Bulldog.
Mm-hmm.
It was Shawn Michaels. And I know you probably like this match. You got memories on this match. What are your thoughts here with Shawn Michaels? And I really want to frame this here, because this right here was when you didn't just have Shawn Michaels at this point. You had Shawn Michaels with China, with Hunter Helmsley, and with Rick Rude. So in that short time, they started as we know it, DX started to form. They started to get together here, started to maneuver and mix in here. So Shawn wasn't coming out by himself to face the British Bulldog. And mind you, this was the main event match. And know those out there who've been listening to us that may be young, it was not for the World Championship. It was for the European title.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, who did Bret Hart fight in that pay-per-view? I can't even remember.
I want to say, if I believe it, he fought Taker. And if I say it again, I think...
Yes, he did. You know what? You're right. He did, and it did not main event. You're right.
And it did not main event.
And you asked me about this main event, what I thought about it. So I really thought, it was a situation where, John's undefeated in 97 at this point. And looking back at it, you're like, whoa, this is a big deal with Bulldog going in as champion. Something felt like he wasn't going to win. Something felt like he was not going to win. The only other thing I can think of is the reason why I maybe thought Shawn wouldn't have won, because it felt like Shawn was going to fight Brett, and I felt like they weren't going to put another belt on Shawn to have him fight Brett. But lo and behold, it's exactly what they did. Whoever pulled the trigger on that was awesome, because you talk about nuclear heat. If I'm not mistaken, I know Bulldog dedicated that match to his sister, who walked down the aisle with him who I believe had cancer.
Right.
I think that's what that was. And then for all of that to go down, and then Bulldog loses in his home country to the most hated person, you know, on the roster at this point. You talk about heat. Man, they really, whoever pulled the string on that was genius, because they really got Sean so much heat for that.
He got heat for that, for winning. Well, plus, you know, later on, we don't think about it, and we do now, and Smart Mark's out there say, but you never really won in your hometown.
Nope.
You never really won in your hometown. But one of the things I remember from this, and I heard years ago, and shout out to people back there, remember the website Scoop Central? I don't know if anybody remembers Scoop Central. And they brought this up years ago, and I remember Scoop Central. I used to be on the computer at Coppin State University, you know, looking at Scoop Central, one of the first few dirt sheets online back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
There was heat with Brett. Sean and them got heat, him and Hunter. And this is where I think this is called about politics, because Brett and Taker was not on this poster whatsoever. And they knew the world champion. And I remember that vividly, like, they was talking about, you know, Scoops was talking about how Brett felt that Hunter and Sean kept him off of the poster. Somehow, some way, how is it that the world champion is not on the poster? And, you know, back then I understood, like, okay, I know why Davey Boy's on the poster, because they're going to the United Kingdom. This is his home. It is one night only. They're putting this there. Sean is the biggest thing in the company, and the European title is highlighted more so than the world title.
Right.
You know, not until you got older. And that's where, as I got older, I realized, you know what, dang, that is kind of a farce. You're the world champion, and you can't even get on the poster.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about Triple H. CM Punk not main eventing. I haven't seen too many, you know, this was kind of new at the time that the champion is not featured. Even though we're going to another country, but the championship match is not even featured on the poster.
Right.
You know, that was crazy.
And that, like I said, but it all lends to what I just said earlier. During this time, for the most part, 97, other than Sean, if you were world champion in 97, you got no love. You weren't mid-card. You weren't getting no burn.
But that's the difference between WWE 97 and WCW 97. WCW 97 was highlighting the world title.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The world title was the main focus in 97 in WCW. You know, NWO and the world title, Hogan and all that. So it was like a night and day difference between the two companies at the time about their world title. Now, mind you, we have legends who had the world title, but these legends were not transcending in the day of the Jerry Springer era, as I want to call it. On TV.
Yep. You're exactly right. Mm-hmm.
You know, so Rick Rude and all those. So Sean gets the European title. Brett walks away with the world heavyweight title at this time. You know, one thing that we haven't talked about too much was the tag team champions at the time. You know, the headbangers. We didn't too much. The headbangers really, they don't get much love when they talk about tag teams. But they held on to the title for good.
Yeah, the belt switched around a little while too, even though Headbangers had them for a little bit, but those tag titles really switched around. But we do need to touch on that for a second, because in the midst of that, we got Shawn Michaels and Stone Cold as tag champions, which is great in my opinion. But we had Mick Foley transferring into the other. Yeah, I know we talked about it a little bit last episode, but I just want to retouch on it. Is that, you know, the tag titles were prominently featured. So that was a good era for that.
It was. They were relevant, and you had some of your key people who were tag teams that were formed together, per se, walk around as your tag team champion. I think at this time, maybe I'm wrong, I think WWE was throwing stuff together. Not throwing stuff together, but seeing what would stick, what would create a buzz, what would get viewers over, and I think that's why we saw the tag team titles change as much as we did. If you notice on Raw, you will see a lot more championship matches on Monday Night Raw than you do now because of the competition, because it's trying to keep up with WCW, keep up with Nitro. So you saw more titles and more title matches being featured in 1997 during this time period than any other time period in history. We don't see that many title matches now on Raw or SmackDown, as people will say. But you will see that title defended, those titles defended a lot during that 1997 period. Yeah. Within the WWE. So we leave on, we move from One Night Only pay-per-view, and then we go into Bad Blood in Your House, which came from St. Louis, Missouri. This time wasn't Taker and Bret Hart, but it was The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, which was in the main event. It was mentioned in the previous show. Within these last the pay-per-views in 1997, you either had The Undertaker or Shawn Michaels in the pay-per-view, in the main event of the pay-per-view. Yep. And so it was these two guys were the pillar of the WWE yet again. On this card, very good card. By this time, you have Stone Cold Steve Austin. Austin is making his way back to the WWE at this time.
From the neck injury, yep.
From the neck injury at this time, he's making his way back to the WWE at this time. And Shawn and Taker had the Hell in a Cell match. And this Hell in a Cell match was, and then the stipulation on this Hell in a Cell match was to determine the number one contender for the WWF World Heavyweight Championship at the Survivor Series.
And you know what? And let's talk a little bit about that and then cut it there. Because November and December, I think, need its own part.
Okay.
November and December need its own part. I think we're going to talk about Bad Blood because there are some key things we need to get into right here. But, yeah, we'll cut it here. This is where we'll stop because we'll give fans a chance to digest going into November and December. But Bad Blood.
Yeah, we know that November was real big.
that November and December was big.
Yeah.
So Bad Blood. Let's rewind one more quick part to September, which your favorite match from Ground Zero, Brian Pillman and Goldust. That was for the stipulation that if Brian Pillman lost, he was gone from the WWF. But if he won, he got Marlena for 30 days. And this is key. And he did end up winning that match. And Marlena had to spend the next 30 days with Brian Pillman.
Yep.
Unfortunately, tragedy strikes. And on that 30th day, Brian Pillman passes away. The afternoon before Bad Blood. So, and we hadn't seen this before in WWF because this is it was handled very interestingly in that kind of death inside of the company, you know. So, like, you know, for a talent currently working for the company, I'll put it that way. That was the first one really of its kind like that.
And from a major star too. Pillman wasn't just your regular
star, exactly.
Regular type of a run of the mill guy. Pillman was a top level heel or top level guy in this company. He helped make Monday Night Raw what Monday Night Raw is, with the whole Stone Cold 9mm shock the world type thing. So he wasn't just your average. I think we mentioned Pillman could have been your world champion and no one would have complained. No one would complain.
Yeah.
Pillman could have run in with a champion. He could have been the world champion and carried a belt and might have got, I dare not to say, if Pillman would have won the world title, he could have changed the things for Monday Night Raw like Mick Foley did.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we lost Pillman. And that storyline, and it was interesting the way they did the 10-bell salute the next night. You know, and even during the night of the Bad Blood pay-per-view, it wasn't as somber of a feeling, as you would get with other instances. Now, with that being said, like, just the speculative commentary that Vince McMahon would give during that time. And he was like, we don't know if it was drug use, we have to wait for the, like, it was very, he was very informative.
And he so, was being more careful what he said about Brian Pillman. That
yeah.
he knew Pillman was a loose cannon, and he knew what it could have been with Pillman, and
mm-hmm.
he didn't want to lead anybody on to make it look like it was almost as Vince was protecting his own butt coming off the steroid case.
Yep. Bingo.
Coming off the steroid, it was like he was protecting his own body. You know what, I may not, if I say drugs, they're gonna think first thing that come to their mind is steroids. So let me not say this. Let me be careful how I walk here. We know that he has passed away. Now, mind you, once again, this is the day and age where the internet is starting to pick up a little bit. It's not where it's at now, but it is starting to pick up a little bit. People are reporting things, you're hearing things. No, there's no TMZ, there's none of that stuff, Bleacher Report. But there are some people out there who's using the internet for news.
Yeah.
And to provide quick news and quick things of that nature. So he was trying to be careful what he says about the Pillman incident as he was broadcasting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was smart of him. And that was smart of him. I think he kept it very quick. The only thing that I think I disagree with, or not disagree, or maybe so I was like, oh, that's a little, I don't know, was the interview with Melanie the next night on Raw. Because it really felt like he was, not that he was trying to or anything, but the way it came off, like she literally just lost her husband 24 hours ago. And it almost felt like he had her on to try to vindicate or clear his name. You know what I'm saying? What you were saying? What about that? Go ahead.
It was distasteful. I mean, you wouldn't put anybody else's family member through that. You know, we don't work for the company, so we don't know what they were thinking. But she had just lost her husband.
Right.
Why would you put someone who just lost their husband, let's not mention husband, livelihood, situations, but he didn't die of natural causes, let's say that, you know, to put them on TV the next night and to grill them questions. That's not cool. That's not.
Yeah, not at all.
You know, that's not a PC, you know. But once again, don't work for the company. I think a lot of that was for ratings.
Yep.
A lot of that was for ratings. You know, it wasn't for anything else but to see if we can get the numbers up. Ken, you know, everybody knows Brian Pillman has passed away. Let's see if we can.
Yeah,
you know.
And it's like, I think even the interview was just cringeworthy because it was really like she's sitting there and she's like in tears at this point. And he's still pressing questions. I think that was the part where I was like, whoa, this is really weird. Because he kept probing more and more questions to where it was like, oh, okay, just stop asking her questions, man. Just stop.
Yeah, and that's where it became uncomfortable for everybody. And I think anybody who remember that night, who's old enough to remember, that remember it became uncomfortable. You this guy had just passed away, a father, a husband, you know, a sibling, and you're drilling his wife about that. But let's get on to the whole main event of The Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels. Great match.
In which, yeah, I'm gonna say this now because I have to think about all the other cell matches we've had in history. That one's still top five. That one's still top. If in fact it's still not the greatest one, and the reason why you can place an argument for that one being the greatest one is that it had just enough spots where it was memorable, but it wasn't over the top because to me, and granted, the spots made the match, Taker and Foley from King of the Ring 98, to me, is not the greatest one. It had the right spot. And let me say this. Every spot that was done, every stunt that was done in that match was needed for that match. I agree with everything Foley fell from. I can 100% agree. But I just feel like that one was immediately off my mind if I think about it. Sean and Hunter from Bad Blood 04, the first one with Sean and Taker. DX versus the McMahons is a good one. I wouldn't say top five, but that was also a good one. But you get my drift. Actually, the six-pack, that one was really good also. It was a lot going on, but the six-pack from Armageddon 2000 was also good. So,
look at the ones you named is because they hadn't done it so much.
Yeah,
It was still new. It was still new.
Yeah.
So that's where everybody was like, oh, it meant something. You know? The Hell in a Cell match meant something. You know, meant something here. Before we go there, we got to realize this was also the end of the Intercontinental Tournament. Owen Hart defeated Farouk to become the Intercontinental Champion here. So Owen Hart becomes the Intercontinental Champion once again due to the Stone Cold Steve Austin injury in. He won the tournament. He won the tournament and became the Intercontinental Champion once again. So, you know, that's something else that comes from that pay-per-view that Owen Hart became the Intercontinental Champion. The Hart Foundation was still running Wreckshot at this point. It was dying down a little bit, you know, but it was running Wreckshot. Go back to the tournament, which we didn't hit. Owen Hart had to go against Brian Pillman in the tournament, which Pillman was DQ'd to help Owen Hart to move on. So the Hart Foundation was having a little bit of imploding within themselves also at the time.
And you know what? I think the way it was going anyway, Owen was the right move to put the belt on, the right person to put the belt on. He was the right guy.
I think he was. He was the right. He was definitely the right guy since he was the one that that had it when Stone Cold Steve Austin won it. You know, it was always good to bring it back on, but it was good to bring the tournament in because it exposed us to a lot of different other talent within the company. It gave those guys the opportunity. I mean, I think the night after, if I'm not mistaken, the night after after Owen won it, you know, one of the Road Warriors, I want to say it was Hawk, got a title shot, you know, for the Intercontinental title. So it gave you things like that with Owen Hart being the good worker that he is to help put other guys over in the company, you know, for having that to be an Intercontinental Champion. You know, and like I said, DX is starting to run wild here. You're getting the funny skits. You're getting the gang mentality. They're getting real loose with what they're doing on television, and the Attitude Era is for the WWE is really kicking up here at this point.
Right. Right. And I guess at this point, we got to hit the, you know, with the main event, one of the biggest, probably the biggest thing to come out of that pay-per-view is the debut of Kane.
Yes.
21 years ago, debut of Kane. It's huge because shout out to Creative to create another dimension of the Undertaker character, and essentially they created another Hall of Fame career out of the character of the Undertaker.
Yeah, which we know where Kane is at now, still working within the company, still. Multiple-time world heavyweight champion. Him and Undertaker having a great feud, which was good. This is where we started to see the Undertaker that everyone began to love. The Undertaker that had some kind of, swagger, per se, or some kind of attitude.
Yeah, he talked more, as with everybody. As with everybody, started to have more of a, you know, speak out attitude. And something else that I want to touch on, even after what I had mentioned earlier with Brian Pillman passing, I think this is where the Hart Foundation fell kind of flat. I think they had a lot of momentum, and one of the things that killed their momentum were a couple of things, really. One, Bret Hart being in the mid card, I guess you could say. Bret Hart being in the mid card and not really defending the title in the main event standpoint. Then Brian Pillman passing away. I just think that really. Oh, and Bulldog losing in the way he did to Sean in England, because it was so, like, not embarrassing, but it wasn't even a thing where it looked like Sean just cheated. Like, he won that clean, if I'm not mistaken. It just got stopped. So all the momentum the Hart Foundation had, it was being killed off, and killed off rather quickly, to be honest.
It was. It was the momentum gone, and we know as we lead into the next month, one of the biggest things in wrestling history happened. We'll talk about that on the next show. One thing that the note during the research that I've realized, we talked about Brett, I've talked about Vince McMahon, and in the pay-per-view, this was the last pay-per-view that Vince McMahon ever set behind the broadcast booth.
Yep. Good point. I meant to bring that up. Very good point bringing that up.
This was the last time that he was the lead broadcaster at this booth at this point. I don't know if it had to do what we talked about earlier with the Brian Pillman, the way he was dealing with Brian Pillman. And I want to backtrack.
Vince still commentated on Raw those next 3 weeks. So, I just honestly think it's going to go into what we're going into. Go ahead. We want to go back.
Yeah, real quick, you know, and I'm sure they found out that afternoon about Pillman. So I don't know how much time or way before the pay-per-view, if he was still reeling or still affected. You know, when I think about Pillman, it comes back to my mind of them finding out about Eddie Guerrero. You know what I'm saying? Before show, you know, it comes in my mind that way, finding out about these guys where, you know, right before show, what are you thinking? What are you going to? And it also goes into my mind, and maybe you can help me out with this. You know, Pillman doesn't get the big salute. Eddie Gear gets a good one. But then Vince gives Chris Benoit a good one. And now we're at a point where they find out what actually happens before they give anybody a 10-gun salute or dedicate a whole show to them.
Yeah, well, remember, this Pillman one, there's a couple of factors. One, they definitely didn't know what the cause was. Two, this was the first time it ever really happened in the history of the company. Somebody on the active roster the day of a pay-per-view passes away. Like, that in itself was like, whoa, like, wait a minute. It's a big deal. They didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
I think they did fine. I don't think Pillman had much of a WWF career to warrant any kind of tribute show. Remember, this is pre-Nitro, this is pre-WCW acquisition. So by the time Eddie and Benoit passed away, they already owned the libraries for WCW. So at that point, they're already good. They have more than enough footage on them.
Good point.
Not the same for Pillman. So.
Good point there. Good point. Last question before we get out of here for the night show. Is Brian Pillman a Hall of Famer?
Yes. Eventually. Thank goodness they own the rest of. In my opinion, he's a Hall of Famer. However, I would not be surprised if he never gets that. Wouldn't be surprised.
I think he deserves to go in. But I do kind of agree with you that it'll be a long time before he actually gets there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, that's another show in the books, man. We'll finish 1997 up next week. November in December of WWE 1997, which were very explosive months. You know, if you enjoyed this show, go ahead and check out the other shows. As I mentioned, go to iTunes. Hit the subscribe button on iTunes so you never miss any of our shows ever again. If you like while listening to us on YouTube, go on YouTube. Hit the subscribe button as well. Hey, continue to follow us. We'll try to bring you bigger and better shows each and every week. Just giving you our views and our viewpoints of history from the way we saw it in the years that we addressed here on the Wrestling Marks of Excellence. I want to thank the Wizard for joining us once again. Always, Wizard, your intelligence amazes me.
Nah, no worries. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it, brother. Hey, man, take us home.
Hey, if you're not confirmed, consider yourself denied.
End of story, ladies and gentlemen. Good night. Catch you next week.